I have been blessed in a lot of ways in my life, and I look back on it, and I'm aware of it, and I'm very thankful for it. And one of the ways that I've been blessed is to have grown up in a family that left a very strong Christian legacy. And my grandfather and grandmother, I just picked those two. They could not have left us anything in the will that would have been any better than what they left us. And the way they lived their lives, the priorities in their life, what the purpose of their life was, and I didn't understand all this when I was a boy, obviously. But as I've gotten older, I look back on it, and I think they had it figured out. This is the way it ought to be. And I am thankful that they left us the legacy that they did. And it hurts me in a lot of ways. My Thad, Mark, Kyle, my sons, never knew my grandfather. He died when I was 16. And now they knew my dad, and my mom. This was my mother's father that I'm talking about. And they left a legacy of their own to us, but they never knew Grandma and Grandpa, and weren't little kids running around on the farm up there and having fun, thinking we were working, but we were not. We were doing anti-work. We were making things harder on Grandpa, but he made us think that we were doing something really good. And it bothers me that three generations away, they don't know anything about him except what I've told them. And it's not leaving the helm of the garment. And I know it's going to be the same way with me. Brock and David, who are here today, their children won't know me. Won't know Frieda, probably. And that's okay. That's life. You're on the stage for a little while. You play your game. You play, and you move on. And the question then becomes, how will I be remembered? And how will I be remembered? What is my legacy that I'm leaving behind? And a lot of people think, well, that's just for old people, you know. But to be concerned about that, that's just for old people. Now, it becomes of primary importance when you get up to about age 65. From there on, you're concerned about your legacy. You want to get things in order so you leave your inheritance right, your way people remember your reputation. It's when a lot of people start giving a lot of money away, rich people. They start giving money away so that they improve their legacy, and trying to buy a legacy, I guess you might say. But a lot of charities benefit from it, you know. So, but I think that a Christian legacy, the greatest thing that we can leave to our children and our grandchildren, that's got to start early in life when you're a young person. And it's got to be carried on over a very long period of time to be the most effective. I'm not saying it's impossible to do otherwise, but my grandparents did that, and I am very, very thankful for the legacy that they left me. And I want to pass it on down. Proverbs 13:22 says, a good man leaves an inheritance to his children's children. To his children's children. And that's the thing that Frieda and I have been aware of for a long time because of her family's influence in earlier generations and my family's influence. And that we've been, you know, that's something we've been very conscious of when we have children. And so, I want to talk today, obviously, about the importance of a Christian legacy, but also want to talk about how we can build our Christian legacy and how it can be preserved and passed on down. Inheritances and legacies, inheritances can be a very fickle thing. Some of the land that Mom and Daddy owned was came from my grandparents. Mom and Daddy bought my parents, her parents' old place, farm place. And they bought my mom and daddy's those grandparents' old home place. And so we have both of those in the family. And then Daddy was Daddy had cancer when he was younger, so he couldn't get life insurance. And he lived 25 years after they took care of it. And but he couldn't buy life insurance, so what he did, he bought land. And he was in business for himself, so whenever we didn't have a whole lot around the house, we had enough to go fishing and hunting and do the really important stuff, go to church and, you know, give money and all to church. But other than that, Daddy took all the money that he made and bought land with it. When some land would come up for sale up the country, he'd buy it. And that was his retirement and his life insurance. And so he managed the timber in such a way that there was a rotation that if he died, Mama could continue to cut the timber, and that would be the life insurance policy. And I am really glad he did that. Because we now have hunting land. And I can go back on land that I hunted with my grandparents and still hunt it today. And that's very, very important. But I've seen inheritances like that cause major problems in families. And it turned out what was such a great positive turned out to be a big negative, tremendous negative, more headaches and all than anybody ever imagined. I've also seen them go away pretty quickly too. Some people get the money and they spend it on really stupid stuff and it's all gone. 5 years from now, poof, it's all gone. I was walking about seven, eight years ago, I was walking across the land one day, deer hunting, and we're headed back to the house. There was this gigantic pine tree, about three and a half feet diameter, and probably about 40, 50 feet tall. It didn't look quite right, and I kind of backed off and I looked up. And we had a lot of trees around, but I looked up and it was dying in the top. It was getting bald up top. I knew we got a problem. And we got to looking, and there were many others. We had to come in and clear cut that section, like it killed, because I, you know, didn't really want to do that. And but we had to clear cut it. That was root fungus disease. We had to clear cut, get it out, spray it, let it sit for a year and a half after that, and then replant the whole thing. All those pine trees, and we're talking about some major timber being cut out of that, they were dying, and we had to get them out of there. And lost some of them, and lost, you know, a pretty good bit of money because they were dead. And so that kind of stuff comes and goes. But Christian legacy is something that will last, and it's something that... probably with our memory like it is and the way we want to make things better than they are sometimes. I mean, I've gotten better and better as time's gone on from football, playing football in high school. I've got so much better as I've gotten older. It's unreal. And so sometimes that Christian legacy grows, you know, even as time goes on. And so really important that we do that. Really important to me as an old man that I build a strong Christian legacy that my boys can rely on. That's a source of strength, not for my ego or my vanity, but that's a source of strength for them like it was for me. I love to say that when I went to Auburn, didn't drink, never have, didn't smoke, any of that kind of stuff. And to go to Auburn University and not do that is not many people do. I was pretty lonesome. I didn't have a whole lot of friends with the same values I had. Let's just put it that way. And all of them were at church. And so I was part of the Christian Student Center there, and that was pretty cool. But I wish I could say that I avoided temptations because I was afraid to disappoint Christ, but that was not, honestly, that's not the truth. And my primary reason that I avoided those temptations, for the most part, were I did not want my grandmother to... The thought of her... being hurt, knowing that I would be doing something like that, I did not want to hurt her. And so I didn't do it. So it was that Christian legacy guided me on into the future. And that's what I want Brock and David and Lincoln and Philip to have, something like that. And not just for me, but from Frieda too. So, a lot of benefits to a Christian legacy. Y'all tell me about your Christian legacy. Yeah. Family that's gone before you, and what their faith meant to you. How have you benefited from it? So,
my response, my come from my parents, they did not go to church very much. They did. From their examples, and me coming to find a true church, and realizing that all the years, I've grown, everybody's grown, I'd say wrong, just, you know, that's, it's helped me to be a better man as a Christian, to set the example I need to set for my kids and for God. I think I just look at it, it's hard to explain. I just want to be a man of God, and I need to be so my kids can benefit and then carry on. You know, I just want to hold it.
Right.
I want to see it in my actions.
Yeah. And that's one of our elders, Mike Edelman. He was in the first class. And here we were talking about that. And Mike did not become a Christian until he was 21. And he grew up in a family that was non-Christian. I won't say non-Christian, but they were not church-related in any way, and somewhat abusive. And so Mike grew up like that, but when he was searching for something, that caused him to search for something. And he the legacy was not a positive one, kind of like what I described, but it was one that caused him to start thinking. And
also, he was going to watch. Going to be there for her also. Like my dad, he was a bad man. Now, he was a good man. He worked every day. Went to work. He was tired of the shipyard out there. Probably years in the service. But he was out of heart.
That's good. That's what we're going to talk about. How can we do that to some degree? So.
And I know I didn't start that.
Glenn, what was your family legacy, Christian legacy? Yours and Sarah's both.
I didn't really know my fraternal grandfather. I know I was alive when he was alive, but I was just about that tall and he passed away. But my grandmother married a man who was a member of the Church of Christ. My family evolved. My dad's family evolved.
Daddy's family was too.
But this man made a difference in my grandmother's life. And, well, she had an influence on my dad, but it was not until he married my mother that he became Christian. And through the years, he was not really as dedicated as he should have been. He would stay at home on the farm many times when he ought to go to church with mom and me. In later life, he saw the importance of it, and it became a very devout thing, and served as a elder, and had a sturdy reputation in the community.
Yeah.
So, unlike you, I wouldn't do anything to shame my family. I remember my mother sitting me down to have that discussion with me about just a young boy. You'll never forget that you are part of this family. Whatever you do, it's going to reflect on this family. That's legacy.
Yep, it is. Was Sarah's father the president of Freed Hardeman? That's what I thought. So. David's grandfather. So.
I'm married up. Old man.
That's a good plan. That's a good plan.
I think about my life.
Mine was too, I believe. Different times, and that's the thing I've had to come to grips with. I can't do it like Grandpa did it. That exactly like Grandpa did. I can follow the principles that followed. And but yeah, I just hope I can pass it on. And I'll stay faithful. How can we pass on a Christian legacy? What can we do? And I'm going to speak in general terms. One thing we can do is to model true Christianity. That's the most effective way. We remember lessons we see a lot longer than the lessons that we hear. And so we need to be modeling that every day. Every day in every life situation we come across. We got to bring the words of the Bible to life. And that makes it a lot more memorable when we see them acted out. Worship together. That's one of for me, sitting between, say, Grandpa will be sitting over here and Grandma over here. And let me say, this is in the summers when I went up to stay with them for 2 or 3 weeks. Mom and Daddy left a strong Christian legacy themselves, but I'm going back to my memories. Sitting there with Grandma and Grandpa in that church at Fort Deposit and worshiping, Grandpa on the left and Grandma on the right. The window over here is open, and it's evening service, and the sun's setting, and there's a pecan orchard, and the cows grazing in the pecan orchard right next to the church, and the windows are up because there's no air conditioning. And that's good stuff right there. I'm telling you, you can smell the cow out there. We're singing, and everything's going. It's just that's the way it ought to be. So, but we need air. I wouldn't trade the air conditioner today. Don't get me wrong. No. I'm not going there. But we made the best of not having an air conditioner. Okay, let's put it that way. And but sitting between them, it was security. Everything was taken care of. And that's an icon that is stuck in my head. There's another one that's stuck in my head. Grandma's bedroom was a bedroom. It's an old country house. It's a country house. And their room was big enough. Their bed was over here, and there was a bed right here. And when my cousins and I came up and stayed during the summer, we slept in this bed over here in the same bedroom. There's a fireplace there, and there's two rocking chairs sitting in front of that fireplace. They matched. And there wasn't anything special, but they matched. Grandma was pretty much a stickler for some of that kind of stuff. And I can remember every night before we went to sleep, Grandma and Grandpa was sitting in those rocking chairs every night with a Bible in their lap, and had a Sunday school book there, and they're working on the Sunday school lesson. They're studying the Bible and going through. Grandma came down and stayed with us a couple weeks. Probably about 12, 13 years old. And I was, Saturday night rolled around, I got my Sunday school book out, laid down on the floor, and I'm working my Sunday school book, answered all the questions in it. And I thought what I did every Saturday night. And Grandma said, Ricky, you're not doing some of that every night? I said, no, ma'am, I just wait and do it on Saturday night. She said, well, you really need to be doing some of it every night so you're thinking about it all during the week. I never thought about that before. But that's what they did. They sat in those rocking chairs and they read the Bibles. They did that Sunday school lesson. And that's a memory sitting in front of it. And in summertime, wasn't a fire in the fireplace, so it didn't matter. They still sat in front of the fireplace like it was. And that's a picture that's stuck in my head. And they modeled Christianity. Let me say this. We never sat down and had a systematic Bible study. And we said this in another class too. There's two ways we can teach the Bible, or we can teach a lot of things. Either systematically or organically. Organically, the lessons grow out of life. And that's the way I was taught the Bible, is it, they just grew out of life. And situations on the farm or whatever, there were applications made, Bible lessons taught as it happened. And so because they had the Bible in them, and it wasn't a formal thing, it was the way they lived. And by example, and then when a situation came up, Grandma would say, well, Ricky, you know, this is what we read back over in Genesis, and da-da-da-da-da. She quoted, or come near quoting it anyway. To me, she was quoting it. And so that application stuck there. But they modeled it, and they taught by their modeling. And also, we could model true Christianity, bring the words to life. And that's a lot more memorable than just verbal stuff.
It brought to mind something happened when I was a boy growing up on a farm. We were in the midst of a long drought. Finally, the rain, the good growth crops. Our milk cow got sick. I don't really remember what kind it was, but it was something the vet couldn't deal with. So my dad decided the only thing to do was try to get rid of the cow. So he put her in the wagon and the trailer and we took the mother to the auction. And they had what they call scalpers that would be out in the yard when you're waiting in to go in. They would sometimes buy the cattle if they could at a lesser price, knowing what they could get for them in the ring.
Right.
So my dad was in line. We were going along, and this fellow came and looked at the cow and said, what do you want for this cow? Dad said, well, I really don't know what the vet is. The cow was sick. The vet says, right off, the cow was sick. And they really didn't know what she was worth. So I don't know what the fellow gave him. Little method of this. Anyway, he was honest with that.
Yeah, that's good. That's stuck with you a long time, isn't it?
So when somebody died,
Jim Martin. Glenn. Yeah, we were going to church at Sage Avenue back in those days. Okay.
And he lets you know on a daily basis,
a lot of benefits come from that. Mr. and Ms. Martin, their daughter was burned. Okay. Well, we have one preacher at Sage Avenue who lost a daughter that was burned. And his... Okay. And, but anyway, they were very instrumental in helping our family because I had a little sister that died. And so. And it's valuable, extremely valuable. We got to teach the Bible to make sure that's carried on. Teach it by example, but also teach it in words. In Deuteronomy 6, you know. But make it a part of everyday life. Talk about it as you sit in your house. Talk about them when you're walking down the road. Talk about them all the time. And when kids see that this is a way of living, not just some formal thing, like you go on something, God's in a box. He's at the church. We go visit him at the church, and we leave the church. We leave God and that box, and he's not a part of our family life. When children see that, that legacy is hurt, you know, very badly. So we need to model it. We need to teach it verbally. We also need to pray. Our family was never one for introverted is not the right word, but they're old school, so they didn't. My grandmother never told me that she loved me. I knew it. Mom and daddy, didn't verbalize things like that, like we do, Frieda and I do with our children and with our grandchildren. But I knew it was there because of the way we lived. It wasn't something that was separated from life. It was all integrated in with life. And prayer, modeling, and teaching the word. If we do those three things, we pretty well will build over a period of time. We'll build a legacy that will last. Another way that we can build a Christian legacy, and it's kind of what you're talking about too, is with the local congregation that we're at. And when I go back to the church in Fort Deposit, I still see people that were my mom and dad's age that knew my grandmother and grandfather. And I was up there not too long ago, and somebody that had grown up there had married somebody, and he introduced me, and he said this was Ricky was Mr. PJ's grandson. And that feels good. I love to go back to that old church up there. It's still the same building, still the same pecan orchard, sitting over to the west of it. And that's a legacy that goes back into my family. And Daddy was an elder here, Sage Avenue in here, for 20 years, and before he died. And he was a part during his time on the stage. He did his part to strengthen and help grow a congregation. And our congregation can be a legacy. Our home congregation can be a legacy to our family. Now, let me hasten to add something here. Our pedigree is not going to get us into heaven. It's not going to get us into heaven. It can strengthen us and it can help us, and but we're going to stand and face God one day by ourselves. And that legacy can help get us there, so everything's cool if we face Christ, actually, as judge. But I have known some people in the past that have said, I was raised in the church or whatever, and they feel like they don't have to do anything because they've got a pedigree. And some people carry that legacy a little bit too far sometimes. And what that legacy does, it empowers me to get to know God, to get to know Christ, and then to have the faith of my own. So I can stand and have faith of my own. But that legacy is a big part. For me, that was a big part of me developing my faith. And so I hope we'll all be conscious of leaving a Christian legacy. Guys, I appreciate the conversation that we had. And I wanted this to be a conversational kind of class. And I hope we understand that how temporary life is, how temporary our memory is going to be, and how long-lasting our legacy will be. And and I hope we understand the greatest inheritance we can leave our children is not necessarily money in the bank. That's not bad. Nothing wrong with that. But, or land and trees, and all, because pine beetles going to eat those trees, and fruit fungus is going to kill them, and everything else. But our Christian legacy can endure all that and be much, much, much more valuable. So.